This episode of An Abundance of Not is brought to you by Amazon.com. Amazon affiliated with us. We're very happy about it. Please go to anabundanceofnot.com, click on the Amazon banner, and do all your shopping as normal. Bookmark for ease of use. We appreciate it.
And TLDRGamer.com. When you don't have a whole lot of time to read the gaming news and just want the brief excerpts, visit TLDRGamer.com. for the core info. Thank you to them for the hosting and bandwidth for our podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome in to An Abundance of Not. It is, what is it, June 25th? We always
forget. It is June 25th. It's a Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday, so wait's happy. Tomorrow's Friday, or it's this Friday, which is awesome. And it's my Thursday, because I'm taking Friday off, because I have that kind of ability. Anyway, this is going to be kind of a special episode for us. We have our first special guest here in the studio, former coworker of mine, good buddy, John Parent II, a.k.a. JP.
How we doing, guys?
Good, man, good.
Pretty well.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
So JP's here to talk a little bit about a buddy of his who served for us in the military and some of his experiences and what's kind of happened to him after the fact. So I'll give you the soapbox and let you have at it.
Yeah, no, most definitely. My good friend, Matt Labadi is his last name, actually. We've kind of tried to launch a way to spread awareness to veterans. You know, there, if you look on, you know, national television, there's always a million commercials on how to join the service, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Army. But there's nothing that really kind of, you know, advertises how they can get help once they're out of the service. So, you know, they have the VA that's accessible through, you know, numerous outreach programs. But the publicity is really not there. So, one of the things that, you know, me and Matt want to do is create essentially like a hub to where a bunch of ideas will be created to help veterans find employment, buy their first home, seek help. And so, you know, with Matt being a Purple Heart recipient that he is, you know, that's what's really motivated me and inspired me to kind of reach out to veterans.
You know. So, quick question for you there. I'm not super knowledgeable in medals, awards, whatnot, but the Purple Heart is you're wounded in battle, correct?
December 1st of 2005, he was in an incident that a few IEDs blew up, and he was one of the survivors of that particular incident.
Wow.
My best friend, so we were supposed to do the, you know, the buddy program and join the Marine Corps together, but being the last generation, I have to carry the name. The family wasn't too keen on me joining the service, so I decided to go a different route, but, you know, I always kept in contact with Matt and, you know, showed my gratitude for the service that he's done and, you know, kind of been along with him in the journey of recovery due to the incident. You know, helping him go to VA meetings and doctor appointments and so on. And so being that I see this guy every day, it's really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, how much help that these guys really do need. So it's been an awesome experience, but also a touching one at the same time.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I want to throw a little bit of, typically they'd be fun facts, but these are far from fun. I was doing some research on the Wounded Warrior Project website, woundedwarrior.org. Link is in the show notes for our listeners. But they said something that was really interesting and something that I never really thought about. But with the advancements in military medicine or wartime medicine, along with the armor, flak jackets, that kind of thing that our soldiers now have available to them, here's some interesting stats. So during World War I and World War II, they say that per every soldier who was that we lost in battle, there was an average of only 1.7 soldiers wounded that survived. So we just had way more casualties on our side back then because there just wasn't enough knowledge and technology there to protect them.
Yeah.
In today's date, and actually these are stats following the Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, which were directly following September 11th. They say per every soldier who we've lost, we have 7 surviving soldiers that have been injured. And we've never had, I mean, that's a huge influx for now surviving, but also wounded soldiers, that we've never really considered or planned for the for taking care of them.
Yeah, well, think of this also. So, you know, an active duty member, he does, you know, his 6-month, 7-month deployment, 12-month deployment, comes back and he's still interacting with his other soldiers, his comrades, his buddies, you know, his brothers and stuff. And so when you look at somebody that's in the reservists, when they got shipped out to Iraq and come home, some of those soldiers were released after 30 days. So after 30 days, an individual who is, you know, the front line, the tip of the spear in combat, gets released after 30 days into the real world and says, okay, well, you know, thanks for your time. We'll call you when we need you again. Wow. Those are the people that, you know, and they all need help. You know, I think they all need to be able to have the resources and the access to be able to get help and seek help. But ultimately, you know, you look at some of those soldiers and it's like, wow, you know.
You just got thrown right back into the real world.
And the real world has no idea. They have no recollection of what this individual went through. They might play, you know, video games that kind of depict that, but it still doesn't, you know, instill the fear and
the psychological factors. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
And that's another thing, too. You talk about the world today. I mean, we are, and we're all guilty of it. We always walk around life through blinders. You know, how does this apply to me? And I may have inconvenienced you, but that really doesn't bother me that much. When you throw something like a reservist military member who a month and a half ago were shooting an assault rifle at combatants, and now they're walking the streets with the rest of us, and that's really kind of an interesting. It's a weight kind of really on the mind.
No, for sure, and it just kind of makes me think about how it was back in the Vietnam days. You know, a lot of people had no idea what these soldiers went through. And, you know, a lot of them had compassion, but at the same time, a lot of people frowned on, you know, an 18-year-old boy going into the service when, hey, I didn't really have a choice, you know?
Yeah.
and so, you know, I want to not be selfish and kind of give what I can as a, you know, an American citizen, and just, you know, through my friend, through my dad, you know, my dad works through the VA. So, he did 20 years in the Marine Corps. So thank you, Pops. I appreciate that. But yeah, you know, it's gotta be done. And if I'm a civilian who can do that, then, you know, I hope more will follow and see the importance for sure.
Definitely. Brad, you've been quiet.
Yeah. I've been sitting here listening.
Same here, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it's a touchy subject for sure. You know, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people, you know, that makes them think like, wow, you know.
Yeah, it's an aspect of life that a lot of us, we don't have to think about, and therefore we don't. And then when we're kind of slapped in the face with it, it's definitely a wake-up call.
Oh, yeah.
I think we could all be doing more. I mean, I had a little chip on my shoulder because I went to lunch about a week ago, and there's a guy coming out who was in his full was in camis, and I just, you know, said, excuse me, sir, I just want to thank you for your service, you know, really appreciate it. And, you know, and these guys may hear it all the time or they may not, and I know definitely for the people that I know who were in the military, any little bit of accolation and respect we can give them, an understanding of what they're doing or going through, will go through, have gone through, can mean a lot to them.
I can almost bet you they're not getting as much appreciation as you think they would be, as people coming up and shaking their hand, because I see these guys going through the airport at my work all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never seen anyone come up to a soldier and shake their hand. Now, I'm guilty of that too, but you know, my excuse, I guess, a terrible excuse, but I'm at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got responsibilities to be taken care of. It's really scary. I mean, we're all getting off a plane. Unless you're running to another terminal, you've got 15 seconds to stop and express gratitude.
But you do it anyway. You do it when you can.
There's a time where, like, you know, I really should, but it's like, manager asked me to go do this, so I got to go do this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a manager would have some degree of acceptance if you took 20 seconds, a minute out of your day to give respect to somebody who, you know, you never know what happened. They could be getting off the plane. They could be escorting, you know, fellow military member home who might be in a box. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, there's a movie called, I think it's called Taking Chance. And it's it involves a, you know, a gunny who's taking a fallen soldier home. But
there's a bunch of there's a few, you know, letter YouTube blurbs or whatever, little stories online about, you know, the family who's escorting their son home and you know, military Marine escorting his brother home with his family, and you know, his brother or his military brother's in the cargo hold in a box. And you know, reading that, it's moving. You know, and hopefully from some of these positive stories that they're true, even though there's a cloud over them.
No, yeah, I definitely recommend looking at that movie. I can't. Who's the gentleman that plays in Footloose?
Wasn't that Christian Slater? No. Footloose.
Fact checkers, ho.
Yeah, where's our interns? Damn it. Oh, sorry.
He quit.
Too touchy for them.
But he played Footloose. He also played Invisible Man.
Was it the original one?
What's that?
Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Bacon, yeah.
There we go.
I knew it was like, as soon as we're going to be saying the name, like, yep.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, I just had a picture of him for a second.
But he does,
what's it?
The movie depicts how he doesn't leave the fallen soldier's side and the casket, you know, being that it's in storage. And it is, it's an awesome movie.
He also in that movie with, what's his name?
Yes, he was in that movie.
The actor was Jack Nicholson. I think
Kevin Bacon.
It created that line that you don't know the truth or... No, you can't handle the truth.
With Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Tom Cruise.
So he wasn't that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. He also played the villain in the X-Men First Class movie along with a bunch of other stuff that he was in. So before we get into a rant on Kevin Bacon...
This is not movies time. Come on.
Sorry. Yeah.
So, but no, ultimately we hope that this thing launches here in, you know, within the next 2 to 3 months.
So talk to us about what you guys are launching. I mean, we've gotten a little bit of the backstory with veterans and your buddy Matt. So what is...
Well, I've done some research and I believe it's around 9% of the unemployment rate are veterans. And so one way that we want to try to basically, you know, make that number smaller is try to provide jobs. And one of the ideas that we've kind of put together is, you know, armed security with veterans who definitely pass the screening process. You know, we're going to check their psyche and their physical abilities and so on. But, you know, with all these shootings at, you know, our public and private schools, we want to try to set up a program to where, you know, we have 2 to 3 to 4, veterans that, you know, man a campus, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a veteran, but it could also be a police officer. It could be, you know, a regular civilian who passes a screening, but ultimately, I think veterans love, you know, the military life, the structure, and being able to feel the importance of providing a security to either one person or a nation. And so, with the schools, we figure that, you know, we can go to a private school and see if they want to basically, employ 4 veterans, 2 armed with a concealed carry permit, 2 without. And it's just one of those things to where, you know, when you have a U.S. Air Marshal, you know that they're there. Now, will it stop any particular situation from happening? Who knows? But it's, you know, we know that they're there, so we hope to deter it.
We feel more secure with them. And,
sure.
And knowing that you got someone on the plane, if you were thinking about doing something, now you have an added deterrent. And, yeah, I feel, I see where the thought process is. Yeah. The same thing with the schools. With everything we've been seeing, I mean, gosh, in the past year, we've covered here, what, 2 or 3 of them, Brad?
Absolutely.
So there was the Dark Knight, then there's...
I mean, we did the one with the elementary school situation a little while back. We did the guy from Santa Barbara here a month ago.
Yeah.
And I know there's another one in there. Now, granted, the Santa Barbara one is totally different kind of situation. It wasn't someone going to his campus and shooting up, but There was another one in there too that we actually didn't cover that I almost felt bad that we didn't. But
I remember there was one guy who showed up like at the Dark Knight.
Opening. Yeah, in Colorado or something like that. Yeah, that was weird.
But too. Just think of all those stories we're not hearing too. You know, the violence that goes on at these schools, bullying's on the rise. You know, kids are getting bullied every day, and so I think it's something that we need, you know, as a society to basically, you know, I'm not looking to scare parents by no means, but Garrett, I mean, you as a parent, would you fear having a veteran on campus that, you know, had, you know, a conceal and carry permit that was, you know, either government contracted or the school contracted and felt, you know, that these individuals were qualified to, you know, obviously protect your campus and your daughter at school?
As a parent, Brad, please chime in with your, I know your kids are homeschooled, but let's try to be abstract in the concept here. I think a lot of people, myself included, kind of, you know, we operate like anything else of, yeah, okay, we see that's happening in the world, but the chances of it happening here are minimal. Now, that could be, that's totally just a frame of mind. I mean, it could happen, well, it's not going to happen tomorrow because school's out for the summer, but I mean, it could happen any day, anywhere, with any kid who...
Like we just said,
feels movie oppressed or whatever. I mean, you never know. And knowing that you have someone who's on campus, on staff that is skilled, equipped, prepared to maybe deal with something, it does nothing negative in my mind for the school. And like I said, with the air marshal thing, knowing that there's someone there, if there was somebody who was thinking about doing something, may now no longer do it because... You know, they're not going to achieve whatever skewed goal they have in their head.
No, I'm going to give... I'm not fighting this directly. I'm going to give a particular scenario where someone may actually reject this. Is that, say parents are actually... You know, people will always vary this. Someone will say that, oh, my kid now has to be watched over by armed guards. Like, is there any... Combatant for that.
You know, I think...
Combatant probably was the wrong word.
But no, I know what you mean. I think, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, that there's always going to be the flip side. What if a soldier, you know, his PTSD kicks in and, you know, that is the inevitable thought of, you know, or worry that, you know, something could happen. But ultimately, I think, you know, it's a peace of mind to where, you know, the veteran is not there to babysit.
Yeah.
What he's ultimately there is to kind of supervise and make sure that the facility and the grounds are secure from people with weapons and bullying and so on. You know, the school themselves still have, you know, teachers that go out and watch and supervise, you know, the recess and lunch. But ultimately, I want the veterans to make an impact on our schools to where it's, you know, hey, there's a badge out front of the school that basically states, you know, that this school is being watched by the organization that we want to create. As far as, you know, if parents have an issue with supervision to prevent a scary
potential
situation.
Potential harm, yeah.
I just, you know, I'll ask them that same question. You know, are you afraid that... You know, what I'm saying? I think.
Yeah. What is this concern based out of? I mean, does a weaponized vet, in your perspective, Mr. or Mrs. Jones, is that a risk to your child and not a benefit? And if you see it as a risk, why is that? What is in your head that you feel that this person now being here, is a deterrent for your child? I guess is the question that we're talking about.
Yeah, like I said, I was in no means opposition. I was just giving a likely scenario that may...
Devil's advocacy. We love that here.
No, that's something to think about for sure. I mean, I tried to think of things, but because I think it's such a great idea, it's hard for me to...
Yeah, you never
think the negatives.
Yeah, you never think the downside, and, you know, that's... when you have like, the whole picture.
Brad, you're Mr. Devil's Advocate. I mean, with having kids and whatnot, if they were in a public area, what's your perception?
I think it's great to have good role models for the children that they can look up to. You know, to have exposure to these people that have been prepared to. They have been prepared to pay the ultimate sacrifice if called upon. You know, there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of exposure to that. And, you know, these guys were prepared to fight and die for your freedom. And,
yeah, and if they're still willing to do so now that they're on home side, I mean, ultimate respect to that, obviously.
Yeah.
So you guys are looking at doing potentially a guard service, whether it's at schools or whether it's at, you know, maybe it's just general public places that may warrant it. What other pieces of the puzzle have you guys thought of or toying around with? Or?
Well, we definitely know that there's going to be a huge, you know, with setting up that organization or program, there's going to be a huge insurance issue that we're going to have to kind of figure out and, you know, figure out the legalities. And that's kind of where we're at now as far as, you know, okay, well, what would we need to do to actually push this forward? The biggest thing is just trying to get the funding for it. And that's essentially, you know, when we create our podcast and the awareness, it's to kind of have veterans be able to reach out to kind of talk about their particular situations.
Sure.
That we want to run, you know, we want to run the podcast through the, you know, this foundation. We also, you know, I'm becoming a realtor here in the state of California, hopefully, if everything goes well. And so, you know, one thing I want to give back to them is, you know, veterans can buy a home with zero down. If they qualify for the VA program, you know, I want to basically, hey, you know, I think the going rate average is 3% is what a realtor charges for the sell or purchase of a home. Well, you know, me giving back to the veteran, I said, well, hey, I'll do it for free or I'll do it for 1%, you know. But essentially, it's no money out of their pocket anyway. But, you know, just ways to give back to them, you know, do programs and events such as, you know, what the Wounded Warrior program does. They actually invited me and Matt to meet Rampage Jackson at his gym that was that used to be, you know, here in the area.
Yep. You and I had the pleasure of meeting him, too, locally. It was kind of an interesting day, actually. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I told him that, you know, hey, you know, we actually sold you your first quads when back in, I think it was 2005, was it not?
It had to be 2006. About then, yeah.
He bought the new latest and greatest sport quad by Polaris. Yep.
Oh, that's got to be crazy.
Well, the crazy thing was, yeah, he's standing, you know, on top of his Hummer, blasting the music, partying, you know, dancing around. And
well, I was blown away by him was how calm he was all the time. I mean, here's this guy who's a professional fighter. You know, testosterone's fuming through this guy's veins all the time, so you think. I mean, he's a fighter. I think the perception of fighters is that they're kind of hotheads and they're always looking for the next, you know, punch they have to throw or protect from. But I didn't get that vibe from him at all. I think with these guys that they get it out in the ring a lot of times and then they get to kind of interact with people and they're a little bit more relaxed now because they get that out of their system. But yeah, he was a really nice guy. I mean, he took pictures of people and didn't really have any signs of being annoyed by getting kind of bothered by it. So
that's why I always laugh when we go down to like a Wings place that's down the street from here, and we always see those guys wearing the Affliction and the tap out gear, and they're walking around, you know, ready to fight and going, I'm going to be an MMA. It's like, dude, if you're going to be an MMA, you wouldn't be here drinking beer and eating wings.
Yeah, seriously.
No,
you'd be in the gym hitting a bag right now.
They're fighting the hot sauce.
Right. Yeah. I've been practicing MMA and boxing, Muay Thai for the past 7 months, and you know, you get to a point, you know, training to where you kind of know that your skill level could actually hurt somebody.
Yes, and very much so.
Yeah, so it actually, to me, and I think that's what we saw on Rampage, is that it actually kind of humbles you a little more because, in reality, I don't think there was anybody in that dealership that could probably put him in an armbar or headlock. But
and beyond that, there wasn't a person in the dealership that would even try.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, The guy's a big dude. But yeah, I mean, I used to do martial arts as a kid, and there was a guy who used to get in bar fights all the time. And he said, he kind of told himself, I'm going to keep getting in fights. I better learn what I'm doing. And ever since he started educating himself in martial arts, he never got in a fight again because he came to that same realization. I know now how to hurt you.
Yeah.
And realized that is not something I want on my conscience.
Realized what I could do, and I really shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, very cool. So, so you guys are working on your getting your organization put together, getting a website and all that kind of stuff, reaching out to vets and having them reach back to you, kind of be a place where they can go beyond the Wounded Warriors program, that they can kind of find peace a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, the podcast is definitely up on the rise as far as, you know, people starting to listen to new things. It, you know, for me, podcast actually takes my driving time and my traveling to a whole new experience. And
oh,
so,
God, yeah.
That would be very educational. And
yeah, so I think one way to kind of reach out to veterans and still fill them in with topics of today, but to also give them a way to, you know, reach out and talk and vent, I think is the first start, you know, to be able to kind of put all those balls, get them all rolling. So yeah.
Very, very cool. Rad, you got questions, follow-up, thoughts?
By the sounds of things, I really like the ideas that you're, you know, with the housing ideas for the veterans, and doing a little bit of research pre-show, looking into Wounded Warrior and stuff like that. There seems to be, as you touched on at the very beginning of the show with the VA system and everything, there seems to be a real gap between veterans being able to get into the official, government programs and from when they return back from an active theater. And I think programs like Wounded Warrior and what you're trying to set up with the housing and everything, I think that's an awesome idea to fill that gap, to help them get started and settle back into civilian life. You know, that initial help, that they're not on their own, that it wasn't, you know, hey, you go over and die for us, and when you come back, we'll ignore you. You know, that there's people there to help them and support them and be there for them. I think that's an awesome thing.
Yeah, and like you were just saying too, Brad, the Wounded Warrior Program, they claim that, and I'm guessing these figures are a result of post 9/11 wartime activity with the operation of Iraqi Freedom and whatnot. But they claim that they estimate about 400,000 service members now suffer from what they call invisible wounds, the psychological stuff, PTSD. Combat-related stress, major depression, all that kind of stuff. And they also believe that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 320,000 who may have suffered traumatic brain injury while being on deployment, whether that's combat stuff and whatnot. And what we have to realize with a lot of these vets is that, you know, their lives are forever changed. They've seen stuff that we more or less can't comprehend what that's like. Day in, day out, being in a place like that and having to fight for your life and the guy next to you and so on and so forth. And when they come home, their normal is totally different from our normal. So
well, and the entire, I mean, they're in an sorry, start that again. They are in an entirely different paradigm.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I mean, we live in a society where, well, just for example, with the one issue raised here, you know, we're raised in a society where we tend to believe in the natural innocence of children. And yet we're sending these people over to places where, you know, they do have to watch the 6-year-old and the 8-year-old because they're the ones carrying guns and bombs.
That's true.
You know, and then they come back to, you know, quote, normal society. And, you know, that's not something that you overcome overnight. You're constantly looking over your shoulder. You know, the way, I'm glad it's finally starting to be recognized because, you know, PTSD is a real thing and it affects them. And, you know, it's not a good thing.
I'm glad you brought that point up too, Brad, though, because a lot of us go through and we have a very small window of what we perceive as a threat to us. And when, like you said, these soldiers are, you know, they're being shot at by kids because a bullet from a kid is just as lethal as anybody else, they come back to the society and everybody's a threat. I mean, there's no safe place when they're suffering from something that's psychological. So I guess that would be probably the biggest scare factor for a parent in a school is, you know, where were they serving? What were they serving? And are they going to see my kid as, you know, a potential danger to themselves?
But it just, yeah, we just got to show our respect to them and obviously just kind of understand where they're coming from. As, you know, the background is definitely makes them qualified for the job. So, I mean, I definitely see and have a concern for the parents. But at the same time, I think my program surpasses and, you know what I mean? So
yeah, the greater good of what you're trying to do trumps the few parents that have unjustified concerns. For sure. Trying to see what else I had here is from my notes from the Wounded Warrior program. Obviously, Wounded Warrior, there's no dues to the recipients. That's all donated. Their view is that they paid, you know, their cost by serving and by putting uniform on. So it's not necessarily a new concept or a different concept. But yeah, man, I mean, we need to take care of the guys that take care of us, and I think that gets lost somewhere in the shuffle of things.
Sure does.
Should we, you think? Think we're at what point we can transition to something a little more lively?
Most definitely.
All right, let's try to jump into our normal groove of things here. JP's going to hang out and comment as he sees fit.
I'm excited. But
let's jump into some movies. I'm going to keep playing that sound because I love it so much. So in the movies this past week, we only had Think Like a Man 2 that came out in theaters. That did take number one in the box office at $29.2 million. 22 Jump Street holding on in second at $27.5 million. How to Train Your Dragon 2 at 24/7 and Jersey Boys at 13/3. I don't know if we brought up Jersey Boys before, but it's essentially what you would think. It's the Broadway musical gone on film. And it's
making
money.
Yeah, we did bring it up.
Yeah, no, I think it was hidden. Probably for good reason.
Yeah, I think you brought it up, mentioned it, and went, yeah, and we're moving on.
Yep,
next.
That sounds about right. Coming out this week, though, we have Transformers Age of Extinction. I think I took a look. I think its budget is around the $160 million mark. Sadly, though, it's only got a 50% critic rating. So, not so great. Wade and I do have plans to go see that this weekend. So, first-hand experience is to come next week.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I like Mark Wahlberg, sorry.
Marky Mark?
Yeah.
I'm glad Shy is out of the mix, man. He was getting on my nerves. Plus all his antics off the screen, too, were just not helping.
What's the matter? You didn't want to see someone's love life and not an actual transforming battle?
Yeah, exactly. One thing that's really interesting I saw that they did, though, is that Optimus Prime is back to being the Mack truck that he always was, the flat-faced semi, not the Peterbilt style that he was in the three movies they've done to this point. So a lot of the diehard fans should be able to rejoice in the accuracy to the old cartoons and the toys and whatnot.
I know him with a sword and shield and riding a Grimlock, the Dinobot T-Rex is kind of crazy in its own.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
What's Megatron going to be riding?
Probably nothing, but looks like Megatron's back to the old school where he transforms into a gun, which he did briefly in the first Transformers movie, but we'll see how that plays out. Also, a little side note, movie news. For those Predator fans, It looks like 20th Century Fox is working on a reboot. No word as to when that might come, but if you're a fan, keep your eyes on the horizon. And with that, let's transition to the news, which we all know and love.
Big news this week. The decision's finally in. We were waiting on a decision from the Supreme Court in the Aereo case, hoping to get it before their summer recess. And sure enough, they came through with their decision. It's a 6-3 decision against Aereo.
Yeah, we kind of saw this coming, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I started reading through the opinion of the majority against Aereo. It is a 37-page document all up, so I haven't gotten very far in it.
Wow.
But essentially, the first few pages, they're maintaining, and they go into a little bit of history. And reading the way that they've worded it, I can see why they came to the decision they did. Little bit of history. Apparently, the original cable TV system was an antenna on a hill where it would receive good signal and then cabled to all the homes. It was essentially a one-antenna version of what Aereo is trying to do now. That was the original cable system, and that was originally found to be, you know, legal under the same way that Aereo was trying to come in. And then Congress went back and rewrote some of the copyright and communications laws to specifically limit how the cable TV system could rebroadcast existing signals, and that's what they're applying to Aereo. That, based on their interpretation of that section of the law, Aereo does qualify as a broadcaster, and therefore what they're doing currently is a copyright violation. Their CEO has said, as we've covered before, that they don't specifically have a plan B. So not sure where it's going to go from here for Aereo. One possibility is they could raise their fees a little bit and start paying the transmission fees like the cable companies do.
Okay. Yeah, I think we kind of felt that this is the way it was going to go for Aereo.
Yes.
But at the same time, it does kind of wake people up to the possibility of something different than what we have now as far as the systems in place. And maybe we'll get some other companies that pop up with maybe a different methodology to kind of come to the same conclusion or something along the same lines.
Well, and it also does highlight the difficult task that the Supreme Court justices have trying to interpret a law that was implemented in the 60s and amended in the 90s to something that they couldn't even comprehend back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. You know,
obviously, we don't want laws changing instantly. We want there to be debate and thought to go into lawmaking. But, you know, it just goes to show the difficult process of trying to apply these ancient, archaic laws to, you know, internet technologies.
Yeah, exactly. So, like you said, archaic laws to modern tech, they don't really work too well.
Not so much. So, a little bit of a disappointing turn there, but not unexpected.
Now, Bradley, was the reason our interns quit was because you had them reading the 33-page notes?
Partially, maybe. It seems I can like neither confirm nor deny.
It seems like the same kind of cycle that, you know, we had in the past with, like, cell phones and cell phone companies.
It's exactly the same deal. I mean, brief history lesson that we've talked about before, but when Pac Bell was the only name in the game, obviously having a monopoly on the industry, they were forced to break up and form the sub-companies that we now have, but their territories only overlap so much. Now the cell phone industry has caused that to kind of go away, and we're starting to get more companies in that mix. But for a while, you only had AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, And that was it. And they were able to kind of work with each other to keep their prices high. Now you've got MetroPCS and all these other companies that are popping up to add competition. And the broadcast world's the same way. It's just that much harder to get competition into that realm, which is why Hulu and Netflix are doing so well, because no one wants to spend $150 on cable. But
well, some broadcast system will sell its backbone to, you know, but it's still, I mean, the cost will be half of what.
As long as there's money in it, they'll do it. It just depends on if it makes sense to the almighty dollar, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, Brad, you mentioned current tech, or maybe I did. Yeah, either way. but speaking of current tech, Apple, who you know and love.
Well, that was an epic fail of a segue.
You know what? I don't want to hear it. I'm talking now. You shut it. So we were all a little disappointed in Apple in their developers meeting here, what, a couple weeks ago? And the lack of hardware that they announced. Well, now the rumor mills are running hard with the news or potential news that Apple is looking to come out with two different sizes for the new iPhone, a 4.7 inch and a 5.5. Pretty much saying that they need to compete with Samsung and the larger phones that Samsung has, and this is the step that they've gone to do that. And in accordance with these rumors floating around, two of their manufacturing companies, and one in China, one in Taiwan, have reported to be recruiting aggressively. The Hanhai Precision Industry in China is looking to recruit 100,000 workers, and Pegatron Corp, which is from Taiwan, is looking to increase their workforce 30% as a direct correlation to potential expectations for demand for the new iPhone and the sizes that'll be offered. Looks like the news for this came out after normal business hours in the U.S., and Apple was not available at the time to comment.
Not that Apple is going to comment either way.
Exactly. They'll leave a phone at a bar like they did 2 years ago, and the hype will follow.
Still be placed.
So, Brad, when they come out with a new iPhone, are you going to be camping out?
You know, I've got a hard decision to make on that one. I am due for a new phone. My contract is up. I'm eligible for, you know, contract renewal rates. I'm really torn. It depends on what they do with it. My goal is to hold off for the 6S. Currently, I am on the main release cycle. So, you know, I had a 4. I didn't have a 4S. I have a 5. And I have not gotten the 5S. And I'd like to try and get onto the off cycle because, you know, normally it's the same form factor. It's, you know, all the accessories are already made for it, and you get the hardware boost. It's usually a faster processor and, you know, some new features. So as far as that goes, it would have to be a fairly compelling new offering to make me want to jump on the 6.
That's fair enough. Now, say that you were able to push it or that the 6 was compelling enough, would you be looking at the similar size which you have now at 4.7, or would you opt for a bigger screen size?
I'd have to look. You know, I've seen the bigger phones, and some of them get up into sizes that in my mind are just ridiculous. You know, they're small tablets that you're holding to your
the
ear.
The phablets, as they're called.
You mean they won't fit in your skinny jeans? Or
Exactly. I like my phone to fit in my skinny jeans. You know, I like the size of the phone as it is now. I appreciated the increase in screen size from the 4S to the 5. It was enough of an increase, but it's still the right size that I can operate the entire screen with one hand and one thumb. You know, I'm not having to two-hand it to try and get to everything on the screen. That said, I'd have to play with the 5.5 when it comes out and see, you know. To me, that's a big thing. I like, if I'm going to use a two-handed device, I'm going to go to a tablet. you know, I want my phone to be easily usable from a single hand. So,
yeah, and that's something I didn't really think about when I went to the Samsung, is I definitely wanted the bigger screen.
Sure.
I was doing a lot of streaming and whatnot. But when you are trying to text with one hand, the meat of your thumb can hit the button, or I typo like crazy because I'm not really watching what I'm hitting. I just hit the buttons and send, and I realize that I've been speaking gibberish for a whole message.
You don't use the swipe feature on your
own? No, I don't. I just type away. I haven't gotten used to the swipe yet.
Yeah.
But maybe it's something I got to look into, because my typing sucks on the Samsung right now.
I have realized, by the way.
Shut up.
THST, that is not that.
Yeah, I get typos all the time from him.
Yeah.
You learn to read between the letters.
That's right.
Between letters? Come on, man. I'm with a piece of paper going, if that's a U, that needs to be a...
Well, it's interesting, too,
yeah.
Because
since Garrett got his bigger phone, I've had to relearn the position of the letters on the keyboard just to figure out what he meant to hit.
It's interesting, though. But now I'm kind of embarrassed, but not really, because I don't care.
No, I have Apple the same issue.
Apple had a really great job of the predictive text, that if you spelled a word wrong, but it was you were hitting the letter next to what you needed to hit, it did a really good job of changing it to what it needed to be. And so I never had to really go through and check my spelling on stuff. Whereas with the Samsung, if I don't, no one knows what the hell I'm talking about.
So let me turn the question back around to you then, as you have one of the bigger phones. I know you appreciate the screen real estate, you know, for bigger streaming video and stuff like that, but do you miss the being able to use it effectively with a single hand?
No, but... I have just the standard Samsung Galaxy. I don't have the Note, or I don't have the Mega, which is a 6.3 screen.
Right.
So the slight handicap that I now have with the 5-inch screen, I wouldn't go smaller now that I have it. I think this is the right compromise. Like you said, you can still use it with one hand for the most part. But going to, say, the Note that's 5.5 inches... I would have a hard time with that, and I've got pretty big hands. So, but yeah, I wouldn't go down, but I don't know that I would go bigger either.
And you said that one's a 5?
That's correct.
Okay. So the 4.7 would be about in line with it.
Yeah, pretty close.
But I think with the smart thing that Samsung's doing is it's definitely giving you options, because, like, you know, a lot of your iPhone or Apple users have an iPad, they have an iPhone, they have all the Apple products. So with Samsung, you know, I have the Galaxy S4, I'm in the market for a tablet. And
yeah.
It's just, you know, and I'm looking at Samsung because of the clarity, and I already have one, but I've had Apple before, and I've never been disappointed with them. And actually, on my Samsung, I made it as basic as the iPhone is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of the features in the Samsung turned off, too, because not so much that I want to deal with the features, but battery life can be such a finicky thing. And Samsung's got so many little gadgets and sensors that can track your eyes or voice activation or all these different things. But that means all these systems are running all the time, draining your battery all the time, that I have almost all of them turned off just so my battery can last a little bit longer. But I can tell you, we've got a Samsung tablet and an iPad, and I'm not dissatisfied with either. I can tell you a lot of the apps, though, that are technically available for both, they don't always work with the Android as well as they do with Apple. So that's something Apple's had the market on for quite a while.
And I could jump on my fanboy soapbox here.
Yeah, as you should.
And then we'll just knock off when he does that. So
yeah.
We'll just let you go for the next 10 minutes.
Okay, well, but just very briefly, though, one of the flexibilities, one of the advantages of the Android system, you know, to start with that, is the fact that you can do so much more with it. It has more features. I won't even deny that. But, you know, the iOS system has fewer features for a reason. They only put them in when they work really, really well. And that's kind of what you were going to there, Garrett. You know, the Apple does it so well, they don't put extra features in because they drain the battery. You know, they're not going to put it in and ruin the battery life where you only get 2 hours battery on it.
Well, that, and we talked about before, too, about all these different phone carriers that now get to decide whether they're going to push a firmware update to Android or not, whereas yep. Apple has the market for their own devices. They send it out as opposed to it funneling through all the middlemen.
Well, and when the carrier does decide to push an Android update, they also have the option, and most of them do, they bundle their own crapware. You know, you get an AT&T phone and it comes with AT&T software that they push with it.
Yeah, very true.
You know, whereas Apple locked down on that and said, no, you're getting the software from us and it will only be what we have tested and knows works.
Yeah, that's one perk with the Apple product, that's for sure. The Droid system requires a lot of maintenance, clearing of cache, and all that stuff. So I do that on the daily, but on the iPhone, it's just closing the programs. That was it.
It's and a lot of things with Apple, that's their blessing and their curse. You know, a lot of people don't like and won't buy Apple because they feel they're too expensive and that they're so locked down on their product. But what that gives them is the security and confidence for a good product they can give to their customers. So a lot of people will justify that tactic because the product is a really well-made product.
Sure. So. It'll be interesting to see, though, if they do come out with a 4.7, which the current iPhone, the 5 and the 5S, are 4-inch screens. So it's it's almost a 3/4 of an inch jump. That's not insignificant in a screen this size.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
If they do come out with that, you know, knowing Apple, they're not going to compromise on battery life, so which is a good thing.
Yeah, well,
it'd be interesting to see them squeeze that many more pixels out of it and not lose battery life.
Well, and with a bigger phone means you can run a bigger battery too. So
absolutely.
But like you said, sometimes that bigger battery is a wash with the other components that has to power now.
Yep.
So, there was a nice little rant on technology.
Moving on.
Unfortunately, we're not going to get away from technology. Just going to get to more entertaining technology.
Fantastic.
I like entertaining technology.
Oh, don't we all? Well, since we not have much... Steam, actually, no, sorry. It's in accordance with Steam, but EA's digital platform, Origin, is now offering what they're calling Game Time. This is, they offer a game that you can play over the weekend and for free. And if you like it, you do have the option to buy just like everything else. Now, this is mirror of Steam's, I forget what Steam's one was, Steam Weekends, if that's what it's called. So it looks like EA is taking hints from Steam in trying to make their platform better. And for PC gamers, we do say that Origin is just one step away from malware, which is pretty terrible.
Well, and the problem
it's not the greatest of clients.
Yeah.
And the problem with Origin is that it is EA, and EA notoriously has a pretty bad reputation, and some of their games,
especially when it comes to DRM.
What? No.
Oh God.
No. You know, and the games are only EA's. You know, whereas Steam, they have a lot of indie stuff and whatnot that has a lot more capabilities and options for the customer. But if they're improving their product, it's not a bad thing for anybody.
So is the point of this then that you get to rent the game for the weekend? Is that the?
Yeah. You basically get the full game for the weekend time.
And this is at like a reduced rate, like a couple bucks, or
you get it free
for that time, for the weekend. Okay,
over the weekend, then nice. Obviously, if you like to buy it or you like what you tasted, you can order the meal.
I think that's actually a brilliant idea. You know, give me a chance to try the game. So many games sound good in concept, and then you start playing them, and they just suck.
Oh, yeah.
If I can play it free for 24 or 48 hours and try it out before I put down cold, hard cash, you know, I think that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah, with games costing $60, I mean, you really have to do your due diligence into seeing if you actually really want it. Now, there is somewhere where I think, well, two of us are guilty with this, is that we used to go down to our game store, pick up the used copy of a game, play it, and beat it under 7 days, which is then you get to return it for your full refund, and we just keep on another game used, just play through the games in under 7 days and just keep going and not cost us anything.
Yeah, I did that with Dead Space for PlayStation, and I came back in like 4 days and like, oh no, wait till you get later in the game, it gets better. No, you don't understand, I beat it here, turning it. Oh, okay.
Now, is that 48 hours of gameplay, or do they just give you a 48-hour period?
No, it's just a window. I think it's like a Friday, open on Friday, and it ends on Sunday at midnight.
Yeah, I would definitely see that with just the week, because that is the maximum of time where you would have free time to do it, to play the game.
Yeah, if you imagine it's 48 hours of gameplay, that's... You beat the game four times over by that time.
But... 48 hours of game time, and I have already leveled another tune to 90 in World of Warcraft. All right.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, I mean, if they're offering free games, essentially free demos for major games, essentially is what it is. Yeah, I mean, as long as they make good games and people buy them after that, then it should make sense.
Absolutely. But this is
obviously Okay, you like it. All right. There we go. But this mimics Steam Weekends, which does the same thing. But now, once they have this down, all they need to do is get a community system where mods are available, like Steam does. I mean, like Dota 2, you can get different customizable gear or outfits for your favorite heroes. So, and that's all, what's it called? User-generated content.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the path. Whoa. That was cool. Randy, you still there?
I'm here.
Huh. I think with our hiccups, it's a good place to end.
Yep, I think that's it. Keep on gaming, everyone.
We here at Abundance of Not do appreciate you listening in and would also appreciate you sharing us with your friends via the Stitcher Radio app and also iTunes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and join us at Facebook. Thank you.